The ABC's Word Wizard. The Lord of Language. Professor Rolly Sussex with A Word in Your Ear.
What is it to be polite? And what does that mean in 2025? Once upon a time, it was polite to write a thank you note when you received a present. If you got one now, you'd be shocked. You would stand if you were a man and a woman entered the room. You would call your friends, parents, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. Whereas now, kids are pretty much told, no, just call me Kelly. And you most certainly say, please and thank you. Well, you would. So what does polite language sound like now? And are the rules different depending where you are? Earl of the Erudite, Prince of Pronunciation, Viscount of the Vernacular, Lord of Language, Professor Rolly Sussex, good evening.
Being exquisitely polite, dear lady.
Yes, indeed. And I appreciate that too. What does politeness even mean in 2025, Rolly?
It's changed quite a lot in my lifetime. Because there used to be all sorts of protocols and patterns, and they were actually like a security blanket because you followed the rules and you knew you were going to be safe. Now, for example, you always introduced a junior person to a senior person. My dear boss, I would like to introduce so-and-so, not the other way around. And that, I think, wouldn't be even recognised by a lot of people nowadays.
No.
Oh, so-and-so, you know, so-and-so. And so these kind of things, also, when you write, there used to be, if you start a letter with Dear So-and-so, you finish up yours sincerely.
Yes.
If you started with Dear Sir, you finished up yours faithfully. And because these patterns were there, you knew where you were and you weren't going to put a foot wrong. Nowadays, we've lost a lot of that. And so it's actually quite difficult to be considerate, because being polite is considerate of the other person and their relation to you, and their age and their seniority and their gender and all sorts of other things.
Best regards seems to be as formal as it gets nowadays, or regards.
That's right.
Cheers if you know them.
Yes. But then again, how do you start an email? Nowadays, very often you don't often have dear unless...
unless you really don't know them. Then it might be hi or
that's
hello.
Right. Hi or hello. Sometimes just a first name.
Yeah.
Or initials or nothing.
Because you can't say morning or afternoon, because you don't know when that person's going to receive the email.
It might be in a microsecond down the road or in Vladivostok.
Yeah, that's right.
And again, we've got a new form of politeness, which is very recent, which is, I hope this finds you well. Or I hope you are in good health. The first time I saw that, I thought, have I been giving signs of being otherwise? And yet, of course, the problem is, how do you get an email going?
Is that just an Australian-ism, how are you going? Because we do it in conversation, like on the telephone. We'll say, hi, how are you doing? Or in an interview.
Yes.
How are you going?
Both of those. And again, the spoken is not the same as the written. But the written is starting to imitate the spoken much more than it used to. We wouldn't write, I think. Certainly when I was a kid, you would never start a letter by saying, I hope this finds you well. Because that would give him intimations that other things were afoot. You know, you'd heard some news about someone being on the sick list.
That's interesting. I would have thought that was just a common courtesy, but no.
Well, in fact, of course, how are you?
Yeah.
Is
how
asking the same kind of thing, but less formally. So what's important about politeness then is being considerate, being alert to and aware of the other person, and treating them basically do unto me as you know, I would have you do to me. And so you've got, there's things called positive politeness, where you show friendliness and solidarity and belonging together.
Yep.
And you've got negative strategies where you show respect and you avoid doing things which might give offence. So you avoid taboo words.
Yes.
And they have changed enormously in my lifetime. Bloody was an unsayable thing, except behind the shelter sheds among little kids of age six, you know. But nowadays, bloody is just...
Oh, wouldn't it be considered a swear word?
Not even. And in fact, Mr. Beattie, I think, said bloody in the house about, 15 years ago, 20 years
ago?
Yes. And there was a vague rustle of interest, and then the backbenchers went back to sleep again. And it literally has become... And this has happened to all of our swearing.
Yes. Right?
But unlike that, for example, I was very struck the first time I was in Vietnam. Because someone whom I'd never met before came up to me and said, how old are you?
Oh.
And I thought, well, this is presumably the way they do things in this country. So I responded, no, I'm so-and-so. And the thing in Vietnam is that they have different pronouns to address people depending on whether you're older or younger.
Ah.
And so one of the things you absolutely need when you're introduced to someone is know your relative ages
yes.
so that you can either use more or less respective pronouns.
Well, we got Mama and Papa all the way around Asia. I just decided that it was obviously a mark of, well, you're obviously old, and we're gonna, and it was said with affection, so I didn't worry about it.
And that's, I think, the most important thing, the intention.
Yeah.
Because, again, reading other people's tone of voice and body language
yes.
is not always easy, particularly if they're not using their first language.
Yes.
Now, heaps of people speak English, great, but a lot of them may have reasonable grammar and vocabulary and pronunciation. But the values that they may be activating in English may not be the ones that you and I would recognise in an Australian context.
Yes.
And I've got a super example which I'm very fond of, and that's saying please and thank you in Chinese, because I've started learning Chinese again, and it is fascinating and hard.
Yes, because it's tonal, isn't it?
And not only. There's many things about Chinese which are different. But
yes.
Can you say please and thank you in Chinese? Of course you can.
Mm.
Do you say please and thank you where we would in Australia? And the answer is no. And I was introduced to this by my Singaporean students who asked me, why do you say thank you to the bus driver in Australia? And I said, well, it's a social nicety, you know, it's a bit of good manners and politeness.
But we don't say it to the train driver and we don't say it to the tram driver. I was thinking about this the other day. We only say it to the bus driver. And I don't mind saying it.
No.
Don't get me wrong, bus drivers.
But it's
sort of a strange social idea that we have that is
become
very Aussie.
Yeah, very Aussie. Mm. But we do.
Yes.
And I don't hear that in America, for example, or in Britain. So it seems to be a thing that we do. The Singapore clue, by the way, is that in Singapore you say thank you if someone has put themselves out in terms of inconvenience, money, you know, or special activity or effort, and that warrants thanks. Other than that, you just take it for granted that the bus driver has done his job, he's been paid, you haven't crashed, you've arrived, end of negotiation.
Yeah.
Whereas in English we tend to say thank you a lot. And so English people in Singapore, well, Aussies anyway, saying thank you all the time and sound a little bit odd.
Yes.
And Singaporean people say in Australia say thank you less than we would. And so they can appear a bit surly. And
I was wondering whether that translated then, that they think it's overdone and we think it's
exactly
underdone.
So, yeah. Mm. And in Chinese, there is a word, jing, which means please, you know, please sit down, please come in or whatever. It's used rather formally. But you never say please or thank you to family or close friends because it is assumed that, you know, pass me the salt, whatever, to a member of the family is just, you know, do this.
Yes.
Said nicely, with good intent. Mm. If you say ching to say your mother, then she will think that you're treating her like a waiter in a restaurant or something.
Oh.
You know, and it's a distancing thing. And the same with xie xie in Chinese, which is thank you. So that, do they have these words? Yes. Do they understand the concept? Yes. Do they do it under the same conditions that we would? Definitely not.
No. And that's so, really interesting.
And this is, you know, when I'm starting to do Chinese, I have to start learning the context in which these things are expected and appropriate. And then when you switch languages, you actually switch kind of your social and cultural framework as well. Otherwise, you can come across, you can, as you say, give offence without intending to.
Does that translate to other Asian languages, I wonder, Rolly? Or if you speak another Asian language and there are different rules for please and thank you, can you give us a call? 1300 222 612. I'd love to know, because I would have thought, for example, French and Italian, what we learned, you know, please and thank you. I was wondering whether it's a European sort of translation into English and then to Australia.
Well, I'll tell you something. I, as far as I'm aware, and my languages, apart from a little bit of Chinese, are all European.
Yeah.
I believe that please and thank you are fairly standard, but with one important qualification, which is that what do you say when someone says thank you?
You're welcome.
You're welcome, but we used not to.
Oh.
All right? When I was a kid, it was, your welcome was regarded as an Americanism,
mm-hmm.
which is something that we've adopted. Because in every European language that I've looked at, if you say thank you, the other person must make some response by speaking. You know, mm. you say merci, and in French you say je vous en prie or je t'en prie, meaning it's not a bother, I take it for granted. Danke in German, the other person says bitte schön or something. And this is a ritual, and if you don't get the other bit from mm. the other person who has actually done the favour, then you think that they're cross or something's gone wrong or whatever. Now, what is interesting in Australia, I think we have so many people from Europe, you know, Italians mm. and Greeks and Germans, who do this as well. I think that we've picked it up and taken it on as a new social habit. And nowadays, if someone says thank you, we kind of expect that there will be some kind of verbal response.
Mm.
Because there used to be, you know, you'd smile or give a deferential wave yeah. or something. Nowadays you say something.
Yeah, no worries, welcome.
That's right. Yeah, no sweat.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is American. No mm. worries is Australian, no sweat is American. They've both become so yeah. intertwined mm. that Americans will say no sweat and no worries without knowing, as we don't know.
But at some point, the interaction has to finish, Rolly.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
That is a kind of conclusion. It's closure. We've done it, right?
Yes. We've both said something. We're both happy
you
here.
Don't say something. The channel mm. is kind of still open.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm.
Here's another one.
Yes.
In English, we tend to use indirect statements a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, close the door,
yep.
which sounds very peremptory and the teacher might say that, but to mm-hmm. other people, particularly equals, in a social gathering, you wouldn't say that.
Yep.
You might say, it's getting a bit chilly in here, which is, an indirect statement saying, would someone please do something so that it is less chilly?
Yes.
Right. Or no.
See, it's kind of passive-aggressive, though, isn't it? It's a bit chilly in here.
Yes.
It's like, and?
And?
Sorry. I'm happy with that.
again, in an English-speaking environment, if you hear that, you would expect someone to take some action.
Yes.
Which would maybe, I don't know, offer you a jacket or something.
Yes.
Or close the window or open the door as mm-hmm. appropriate. And again, the if you look at the form, it's a bit chilly in here. Or even a bit more direct, would you mind closing the door?
Mm.
To which some people will say, yes, I would mind.
Just do it.
Just do it. So this is an English thing. If you translate yep. that literally into languages that I know in Europe, like German mm. or French or Polish or Russian or whatever,
yep.
it sounds fussy. Because yep. those, Russian in particular, has ways, you know, if you say sit down to a dog, you say сядь.
Mm.
If you say to someone, it would be садитесь, пожалуйста, which is sit down, please. Okay. So the longer mm. it is, the more polite it tends to be. But how long it is and how complicated it is, it depends on where you are and what language.
All right. So it can be, as you say, very tricky depending where you are. Saving face, what about that as a cultural way of being polite or impolite, maybe if you don't let somebody save face?
Yeah, well, face used to be thought of as an Asian concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your self-respect and your image of you and how mm. you would like people to show respect for that image. And so if someone did something, shall we say, corrected you in public mm. or criticised you in public, that was very, very bad manners, and you would not do that to their face.
Mm.
And it actually carries through into modern, say, Japanese, where people will not say no to your face. It is extremely confronting.
Mm.
And so they will say something like, you know, that's very interesting, we'll think about it, which is a gentle and kind way of saying
no.
No.
Not going to happen.
Absolutely yep. the reverse happens in Hebrew. Which mm-hmm. is spoken in Israel, where
yeah.
the people who speak Hebrew expect you to be very direct and concrete. And mm-hmm. so if you get someone speaking Hebrew, whose first language is Hebrew, communicating in English, talking to someone whose first language is Japanese, communicating in English,
they have a
problem.
That's going to be a very strange discussion. The communication is
exactly.
going to be very
you
tricky.
You need to be very aware of the cultural values on the other side,
mm.
but also what's called accommodation.
Yeah.
When you change your behaviour to be a bit more like the other person as a means of lessening the space between you mm. and increasing the possibility for comfortable interaction.
Yeah.
And accommodation Accommodating is very tricky. Yeah.
Can I tell you, Roland, there was a Star Trek episode. I know, I'm getting off topic, but I'm not really
off topic. Pray do.
There was a Star Trek episode where Wesley Crusher was communicating with, I forget what race it was, and they didn't like politeness. They preferred absolutely blunt conversation. And if they felt you were being polite or you weren't telling the truth about how you felt, that was an insult. You could say the worst thing in the world as long as it was true for you.
Wonderful.
And you were being upfront, they would accept it. But as soon as you tried to, lessen your language, be kind with your language, if it was no
soft.
Need to be, yes, they took that as an insult. And I thought, that's a really interesting concept about how people communicate and what can be seen as polite in one place is seen as
wonderful.
An absolute insult in another.
I do remember seeing that a long time ago. Thanks for reminding me.
You're welcome.
Because it's exactly what we're on about.
Yeah.
Here's another one.
Yes.
If you're talking to someone, how do you manage your role in the conversation? Now, you're talking, they're listening. What do you expect them to do?
Respond.
Or not, because if you're in the middle of a long flow of speech.
Diatribe.
Yeah, you prefer not to be interrupted. So managing turns, you know, whose turn is next and how do they know and when may they jump into the conversation. But there are other things. You're expected to maintain eye contact in English anyway. Now, listeners will maintain more eye contact than speakers. Speakers will tend to look away.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly, you know, if I'm lecturing or something, I would look at lots of people in a room, but I would expect them to look at me. So eye contact is a sign of continued attention and the fact that I have your listening, as it were.
I was once told that for young Indigenous people, making full-on eye contact is seen as being very confrontational.
Absolutely.
And disrespectful. So where we would say, "Oi, look at me when I'm talking to you," they're thinking, you know, they might be thinking, "Oh no, that's not what we do." But we might interpret that as being shifty, or that they've got something to hide. Whereas, no, that's culturally just very different.
Exactly so. And again, there are some Asian women tend not to engage in eye contact for the same sort of reason. Indigenous values in Australia are more that eye contact, direct eye contact, is either challenging, or disrespectful, or sexual.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, if I'm talking to you, I might actually be facing 45 degrees away, which seems to an ordinary English speaker very strange. And yet it's in a way of showing ultimate respect. Here's another one. In Japan, they do something called back channeling.
Okay.
And back channeling is when, as a listener, you actually say something to encourage the speaker to keep on going. And Japanese people tend to say hi, which is yes. So you're talking to me and talking and talking and talking, and even when you don't make a pause, a Japanese person may say, "Hi," suddenly, you know, indicating, "I'm listening, I'm with you, pray go on, you know, I'm with this." Japanese people who know English, and I know some Japanese people who speak wonderful English, tend to carry that habit over into English as well. So you're talking to them and suddenly the person you're talking to will say, "Yes." And you think,
what are we answering?
What have I done? And yet again, this is a sign of good manners.
Yes.
Not interrupting, not anything else.
Like that.
And this is, dear people, this is why we must not only learn other languages, but we've got to learn other value systems as well. Because even when people switch language, they don't always switch value systems at the same time.
Indeed. And knowing when to be quiet and when to not be. On our quiet carriages, Rolly, I think they're the quiet carriage, not the silent carriage. Mm-hmm. And nearly every carriage now has to be the quiet carriage. It's like, surely we can have a conversation, but if it's different people also have an idea, different ideas of what's too loud.
Oh, yes.
And what isn't. And teenagers can be having a conversation, but they're just young and loud.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not being rude. They're not doing anything but being loud. And, you know, they get flash filthies and I think, you know, they're just being young.
Two big ideas there. One is silence itself. And in English-speaking cultures, in most of Europe, we are very uncomfortable with silence, except for the Scandinavians. The Finns are very happy with silence.
Yep.
And you can sit silently with someone and it's a successful interaction. And the notion of volume, I mean, the French are quite subtle about this. In a French restaurant, you can almost always have a conversation with the person across the table from you without having to shout. Because everybody else tends to be rather quiet, and particularly for intimate conversation, that's very convenient.
Mm.
But in a decent restaurant in Australia, people tend to shout, and the louder you shout, the louder the people at the next table have to shout to be heard. And it becomes a cacophony.
Yeah. Or they've got the music turned up all the way to 11.
Indeed.
And you've got to shout over that.
Oh, and now, ask them to turn it down.
Let's see. Kelly and Rolly, I often hear Kat Feeney on Arvos after interviewing someone, and when wishing them luck says, chookers to you for whatever they're going to attempt. Can you please explain? Cheryl at Yorkie's Knob. Yes. I know. You would know,
yes.
Rolly.
Oh, yes. You're more of a dramatist than I am, probably.
Well, let's say we're on evil. Well, you don't say good luck in the theatre because it's considered bad luck. So instead, we say chookers. Mm. So chookers is just a way of saying good luck.
And
without saying good luck.
The story is that it comes from days when chicken was still a luxury meat that one had on Sundays rather than lamb or beef or whatever. And so it's a bit like saying, I hope you have a successful performance or whatever, and that you are in a position to have chicken for lunch on Sunday, something like that.
Mm.
And it's very common between people who are in the performing arts. At all.
Yep. Chookers, lovey.
Yes. And it sounds, if you know what they're saying, it sounds wonderful. Mm. If you're outside the magic circle and don't know.
It's like, what the heck does that mean? Now, I've got a question here from Mississippi Rod. Rod, hello.
Hello.
Now, you've got a word that's been puzzling you since you moved to Australia.
I've been here almost 20 years. I hear even like news reporters saying this, so I'm just wanting to ask the legend. And by the way, you have one of the most sexiest voices on radio.
Oh, did you hear that, Rolly? You got a fan.
just thought I'd let you know.
Thanks, Mississippi Rod.
Anyway, here we go. I hear people saying when I grew up, I learned the word negotiate.
Hmm.
There's a lot of people who say negotiate, and it just drives me nuts. Which one's right? I thought T-I-A-T-E was pronounced negotiate.
Yeah. Okay, that is what the dictionary will. Yeah, that's what the dictionary will tell you, and the Merriam-Webster dictionary, which is the leading American dictionary, will say the same.
Hmm.
However, there is a thing called a hyper-correction, where you're kind of overcorrecting. You're looking at the spelling and say, "Hang on, now negotiate is T-I, so negotiate." That sounds weird, but in French it's négociation, which is a sieur, and so that. From sieur to sieur, it's called palatalization and it's standard in ordinary English. But Julia Gillard used to say negotiation. And it was one of the features of her language which made her distinctive. It's a kind of second choice. It's certainly not the most common.
No.
I've never heard that in the US, by the way. But Mississippi, well observed. And watch out for it. And see if you can identify when you hear it next who's saying it. What about their age, gender, possible education? It is a thing which can differentiate people. Differentiate. Gotcha. Thank you, Rod.
I like it. Thank you,
fantastic.
Rod.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for that lovely compliment. I did appreciate it. On a recent holiday in Vancouver, says Janet Carindale, we weren't the only ones who thanked the bus driver. Maybe the habit is spreading. Well, that's nice.
Well, it would be, yes. Something like, well, selfie is also an Australianism, by the way.
Yeah.
So maybe there's more that we've given the world.
Oh, good on us.
Yes.
Ian at Black Mountain says, I take backpacker tours to Gari, and the English especially use sorry as the start of many sentences.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go.
I'll look into that one. Because we sometimes do have trouble getting sentences going.
Yep.
Which is why people may say so, meaning be
that's
patient.
My think time word.
It's my think time. Speech will shortly arrive. Just be patient.
Yep.
Also, yes, no, in response to a question.
Yeah, nah.
When you're not quite sure what you're going to say, so I need to reflect a bit.
That's it. Yeah, nah, nah, yeah. One of the two, Rolly.
You do that much more authentically than I do.
Thank you. I think. Do you have a last word for us, Rolly?
Yes. This one is from a lady called Mary Wilson Little, who I don't know. Mm-hmm. Politeness is half good manners and half good lying.
She's so right. Thank you, Rolly.
Thanks, Gail.
The ABC's Word Wizard. the Lord of Language. Professor Rowley Sussex with A Word in Your Ear.